God or science? I would have to go with science. I need something tangible and reliable to believe in.
Hey everyone, we're starting a brand new series today called The Problem of God. You know, we talk a lot around here about how Jesus is the answer, about how God is the solution, but there are a lot of people, and maybe some of you in this room, that would argue that God is actually the problem. And so we're going to be exploring some of the key problems that people have with Christianity and the God of the Bible. And so during these next 4 weeks, we're going to be exploring the problem of science, the problem of God's existence, the problem of the hypocrisy of believers, the problem of sex. And it would be a fantastic series to invite some friends to, especially those who may be skeptical about Christianity. I know some of you are here already in the crowd today who have some serious doubts about God and this whole faith thing. And you may be an atheist and you may be an agnostic. Maybe you're not sure what you believe, but you've kept an arm's length distance from Christianity and the church because maybe a crappy experience that you had in the past or during your childhood. And whatever it is, I just want to tell you that I'm so thrilled that you're here today. It says a lot about your open-mindedness and a heart to explore the truth no matter where it may lead you. You overcame a lot of cultural stereotypes about Christians being tied to this political personality or that repressive idea. And so I'm really honored that you're here today. And I pray that you'll feel warmly welcomed and accepted by this family called Grace. You know, we also have a little giveaway going on this month with this series at our physical locations. The first 100 first-time guests that come through our doors this month across all our sites will receive a free copy of the book that we're basing this series on called The Problem of God by Mark Clark. So just let us know that you were here with us by filling out that blue card in the seat back in front of you. Take it out to our Next Step Center after the service, and you can pick up your free copy of the book out there. Now, no matter who you are or what you believe today, I'm so glad that you're here. And as we begin, I want to start from a place of common ground. There are two things, I think, that level the playing field. The first is this. Everybody in this room today, everybody within the sound of my voice, has faith. You see, there's this false narrative that suggests that if you're a secular person, that you believe in reason and truth and evidence. But if you're a religious person, you believe in fairy tales and huge leaps of faith. And the truth is that every single belief system, atheism, agnosticism, Oprahism, you know, whatever you believe, even those who would say, I don't believe in anything, that's a belief system. You believe in not believing in anything, and you put your faith in that system. And so these belief systems, they can't be proven through science. They take, well, faith. Physics, you see, can only lead us so far, and history can only lead us so far, and geology and math, these things can present a certain amount of evidence, but the big questions like, how did we get here? What is the source of ultimate truth? These questions require faith in a bigger system of belief or worldview. And although we may disagree on the worldview, this at least puts us all on this level playing field. We can all acknowledge that there are really smart people on all sides of these issues. This is not a matter of, you know, the smart people believe this and the uneducated morons believe that. It's a tactic that's worked for certain groups historically, but it's not right or fair to divide up these issues like that. We have to remember humbly that we're all on a quest here for truth. And at some point, every single belief system requires an element of faith. Here's the second thing that levels the playing field. Everyone has questions. This is a great leveler. In our honest moments, when we turn down all the background noise of our lives and really ponder the big questions, we all wonder, don't we? We all become aware of the weaknesses in our worldview, those situations or circumstances, those pains or heartaches, those gaps that aren't explained well in our worldview when things don't line up. And I've found that the people shouting the loudest and acting the most certain in their beliefs often have the deepest doubts. I know for me, the longer I live and the more I study and learn about the God of the Bible, the more I realize that there's a lot I don't know. And so my prayer is that in the midst of our doubts and questions, that we would follow the evidence wherever it leads during this series. Now, obviously, we're in a church, and so there's a good chance that we'll be arriving at some Christian conclusions. But I know for me, this journey, of faith has led me through the doubt and the skepticism, and yes, a season even of atheism, to see that maybe the Christian worldview has something significant to offer. And so, as humbly and honestly as we can today, understanding that we all have faith in something and that we all have some questions and doubts sometimes, we're going to explore our subject together as fellow travelers today, all right? As we talk about the problem of science. Now, why would we look at this particular subject in week one of this series? Well, ultimately, here at Grace, our desire for this series is to equip you, the people of Grace, to be a light for Christ in your neighborhood and workplace and families. Remember, our overall vision statement as we've entered into this new Transform 1-8 vision is that our church would be transforming communities through transformed people. This means that as we ourselves are being transformed by Christ, that we're going to become a transformational force in all of those smaller communities of people where we find ourselves. And one of the ways that we want to equip you is by becoming more conversant in some of the leading issues that people have against Christianity. In his book, You Lost Me, Why Young Christians Are Leaving the Church and Rethinking Faith, sociologist David Kinnaman found that one of the leading factors that causes young people to avoid Christianity is this perception that the church is anti-science. A whole generation is turned off when they see the church as anti when it comes to issues like evolution or environmental care or global warming or technology advances, stem cell research, bioethical matters like the beginning of life issues and end of life issues. It becomes for them another reason to say, the church doesn't get me. The church is old and stuck and probably not for me. And so we want you to be having conversations about these issues so that you can be a transformational force to the people around you. And so we're going to come to what I believe is a very enlightening passage of Scripture at the end of this message today in Romans chapter 1. So you can find your way there as we go through the message. But I want to set the stage today by first discussing three surprising truths about faith and science. You ready? Here we go. Here's the first surprising truth. Faith and science are friends, not enemies. So there's this common belief today that there's a war going on between science and religion. In fact, our society would have you believe that you can either believe in science or you can believe in faith, but it can't be both. And one of the reasons that this idea is so prevalent is because the media has to always present news reports with a protagonist and an antagonist. It makes for much more interesting TV. Or just read the headlines in your online news feed and see how many of them resemble an MMA fight more than a legitimate news story. So-and-so slams Chuck Schumer. Twitter demolishes this person. The president slams the media, right? It's more clickable if we're rooting for or against someone. And so when it comes to science and faith, it's always being presented as a battle. Evolution in schools, climate change debate. And usually it's presented like this. On the side of science is truth and evidence and objectivity and intelligence. And on the side of faith is ignorance and backwards and wishful thinking and subjective. My favorite is when they have a debate set up on TV talking about, you know, environmental issues. And they say, okay, on this side, our distinguished guest is Dr. Edmonds, a Nobel Prize winner and a dean at Oxford University, right? And on the other side is this toothless mouth breather, you know, Reverend Billy Bob from the Backwoods Church of Snake Handling. Now, just watch TV and tell me that that doesn't happen, okay? And so we've created this conflict narrative between faith and science. And this conflict narrative flowed from a generation of leading atheists like Richard Dawkins and Sam Harris and Christopher Hitchens. That it has to be an either or. It's either science or faith, but you can't have both. And they're the ones that drew these modern battle lines. Richard Dawkins said this. He said, faith is like a mental illness. A great cop-out, the excuse to evade the need to think and evaluate evidence. Sam Harris agreed. He said, we have names for people who have many beliefs for which there is no rational justification. We call them religious. Otherwise, they are likely to be called mad, delusional, or psychotic, right? But maybe, just maybe, the worlds of pure secularism and naturalism that resort to this kind of name-calling and bullying are the ones that are outdated. It's amazing that such life and death certainty are placed on these scientific theories that are constantly changing. Some of you may know that my family and I were recently in Germany, and we were visiting an old friend there who's retired, and he brought out some of his old physics textbooks from when he was in university some 50 years ago, because my son is in college right now studying some of the same subjects. And so I snapped a picture of the book. We flipped open to page one of the physics and the physical universe text, and we read right there on page one, and within 30 seconds, my son Caleb said, "Oh, that's funny. We just learned about how this foundational hypothesis of this book has been disproven." He said these words. He said, "Page one isn't true anymore," right? Now listen, I'm not in any way saying that science isn't profoundly meaningful and important, because it is. But just as there are times when faith has gotten it wrong, science has gotten it wrong too. These aren't foolproof, standalone theories upon which we stake our lives in eternities. Here's what I'd like for us to consider. Is what if it's not science versus faith, but what if it's science and faith? What if faith and science are friends and not enemies? What if we didn't believe the sound bites that say that there's a good guy and a bad guy in this story, but that we actually need each other? What if science and faith working together makes sense of the evidence better than an atheistic or secular worldview can do alone? And listen, there's a movement in this direction in the scientific community. I mean, the media would have you believe that there are zero brilliant scientists who are also Christians, but that's simply not true. A major national study a few years ago just showed that over half of all scientists believe in God. 36% of them said that they have no doubt about God's existence. Only a minority of scientists are actually atheists. It used to be thought that the more intelligent we become, the less need that we would have for a belief in God. But this is just not happening. In fact, Mark Clark points out that the tide seems to be turning in the other direction. That within the scientific community, there's actually a movement against atheism. And it's being called kind of naive and intellectually dishonest to be a scientist and not allow for the possibility of God, because there are so many gaps and unanswered questions in the scientific record. Now, my point here is not to demean atheism, but to suggest that we must reject that notion that there is an inherent battle between faith and science, and consider that the two are friends and not enemies. All right, here's the second surprising truth. It's that modern science was created and has flourished as a result of Christianity, not in opposition to it. You see, it's just not true that Christianity is not at war with science. But many historians are now acknowledging that the whole early movement that led to modern science was actually conceived and born and flourished in an environment of Christianity. Mark Clark calls Christian theology the garden out of which modern science grew. Because finally, there was a worldview, a faith system, that allowed for the tenets of modern science to thrive. It's one of the reasons that it drives me nuts when I hear some Christian leaders playing into the anti-science stereotype and spouting off any chance they get about the evils of science and scientific advancement. Give me a break, man. What God do you believe in? Because the more we learn about this world that we live in and the universe that we live in, the more we learn about God. This has always been the case. You see, historically, no other worldview, no other philosophy or religion of the ancient world allowed for scientific exploration like Christianity did. In fact, most other worldviews inhibited it. Here's how Clark breaks it down. He talks about animism. Animism was a popular ancient religion and worldview. But animism believes that there's a God in everything. There's a God in the trees. There's a God in the rocks and in the water. And you could see how that view would inhibit scientific investigation, because you wouldn't be able to experiment on God. You wouldn't want to cut open God. You wouldn't want to research God. And so you're inclined just to leave everything as is and leave God alone in all these elements. Or take Buddhism, for example, or some other Eastern religions. Buddhism claims that the universe is an illusion. And so scientific inquiry would be pointless, because all of your findings would be an illusion too, right? Or polytheistic religions, those with many gods. They explained everything that happened in nature by citing the actions of various gods. So water bubbles up in the ocean because Poseidon is stirring up the waters. And so there's no point in inquiry. Everything that happens is attributed to a different god doing something. And then you have Islam and Judaism, where these were less concerned with reason and research as they were with the study and interpretation and implementation of the law. In fact, even some of the great ancient civilizations that developed tools and technology, they just lacked the philosophical framework necessary to birth the experimental exercises known as modern science. Now, all of that said, on the other hand, Christianity provided the first framework for modern science to thrive. Think about some of the key Christian beliefs that created this fertile atmosphere. Christianity says that the physical universe is a distinct objective reality. Christianity says that has this idea that the laws of nature exhibit order and patterns and regularity, and that the physical universe is intelligible and knowable. And even the belief in Christianity that the world is good and it's valuable and it's worthy of careful study. These were all Christian tenets. And so this modern narrative of Christians being scared of science and any kind of deep thinking, it's just simply historically not true. In fact, the idea of higher education itself, the invention of the university, this pillar of learning and intellectual excellence, is created. It's a Christian invention. Harvard and Yale and Brown and Dartmouth, these were all started as Christian universities. And honestly, there really wasn't a wave of anti-intellectualism in the church until pretty recently in America. I mean, when the pilgrims came and landed, these Christians prized intellectual life. The Puritans, they were highly educated people. They founded colleges. They taught their children to read and write before age 6. They studied art and science and philosophy and other fields as an act of worship to the God of the Bible. But in the middle of the 1800s, things began to shift. With the first and second great awakenings came an overemphasis on immediate, emotional, personal conversion to Christ instead of an overall intellectual engagement. And so many people converted to Christianity, but they had no real grasp of Christian teaching. And at the same time as all this was happening, an intellectual assault on Christianity was brewing that reached full force in the late 1800s with the likes of David Hume and Wellhausen and Darwin. And instead of responding to these intellectual challenges with vigorous, well-reasoned responses, many believers grew suspicious of intellectual issues altogether. And around the turn of the 19th century, fundamentalists in our country withdrew from the broader intellectual culture altogether, and in many cases removed themselves from all public discourse. And guys, this approach is neither biblical nor is it consistent with the bulk of Christian history. Remember, when Jesus was asked, "What is the greatest command?" He responded with these words. He said, "You shall love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your what? With all your mind." We're to love God with our intellect, not just the spiritual stuff that gives us goosebumps. And so I pray that we might return to our roots and create an environment where scientific discovery and advancement are encouraged and celebrated and compatible with our faith, because that's where it all started. All right, so our surprising truths are these. Faith and science are friends, not enemies. Secondly, modern science was created and has flourished as a result of Christianity, not in opposition to it. Here's number three. The study of science can lead us toward faith and not away from it. There's a movement currently among great thinkers, fueled by one of the world's best philosophers named Alvin Plantinga, back toward the tenets of theism, that is, a belief in God. The walls that have separated faith from reason are crumbling. I mentioned at the beginning how the more I learn about God, the more I realize I don't know. Well, the same thing is happening for some scientists. The amount that we are learning through science is accelerating so rapidly, yet at the same time, it's only amplified all that we don't know. And as I said, everyone has to do something with that gap that's left. That's the gap that we would call faith. So let's talk cosmology and the universe just for a moment, okay? We're going to talk more about this next week, but let's inch into it today. Have you heard about this thing called dark matter? Okay, scientists know that a certain amount of matter was necessary for the universe to exist. They know what that number is, the amount that's required. The problem is they can only account for 5% of that number. That means that there is 95% of the matter that's needed for what happened to have happened that we know nothing about. Neil deGrasse Tyson has a great quote. He's an astrophysicist. He says this. He said, "I get asked all the time what dark matter is. And the answer is, I haven't a clue. We don't know what it is. And it's kind of annoying, but we desperately need it in our calculations to achieve an accurate description of the universe." It's fascinating, isn't it, that it's been over four centuries since the apple dropped and we began to codify things like the laws of gravity. And this discovery contributed to the Enlightenment and now to over 400 years of amazing scientific discoveries. Yet after all of it, 95% of the universe is a complete mystery to us. There's this stuff that's got to be out there to make all of our calculations work, but we have no idea what it is. The more we know, the more we realize we don't know. And so what do we do with that gap? Well, Alan Sandage was an astronomer and the successor to the great Edwin Hubble. He worked at the Carnegie Observatories and won many prestigious scientific awards. His accomplishments include things like developing the first, reasonably accurate value for the Hubble constant, postulating the age of the universe, and he also discovered the first quasar, okay? And this great scientist said these words. He said, "It is my science that drove me to the conclusion that the world is much more complicated than can be explained by science." And in 1983, he went from being an atheist to becoming a believer in Jesus Christ. Now, speaking of the Hubble telescope, speaking of this guy named Hubble, let's talk about the Big Bang Theory. When the Big Bang Theory came out, it was thought that it would deliver a major blow to Christianity. But instead, it actually became a major problem for atheism. You see, up until Hubble's discovery, many in the scientific community, especially atheists, were under the assumption that the universe had always existed. You know, part of the knock against the idea of a divine creator was the fact that the universe has always been here. The universe itself, they said, is the uncaused cause. So there's no need for us to consider any type of God other than, an outside cause like that. Until 1929, that is, when a guy named Edwin Hubble made what has been called the greatest scientific discovery of the 20th century. He discovered that the universe itself actually had a beginning. That one second it wasn't here, and then it was here. Now this fact is very inconvenient for secular atheists because now they have to do a whole bunch of intellectual gymnastics to try to show how all of this could happen without considering that maybe where you see a design, there was a designer. And maybe where you see that something began, there had to be a cause outside of itself that began it. Because it's been proven scientifically that everything that has a beginning has a cause. Nothing just magically pops into being. We can't create that. Cell phones just don't come out of nowhere. A new tree in the backyard doesn't just materialize. Pepperoni pizza doesn't just appear, right? Now that pepperoni pizza, that's proof of God right there, isn't it? Just the existence of pepperoni pizza. Anyway, everything that has a beginning has a cause. Nothing just appears. And so it follows scientifically that the universe had a beginning, therefore something caused the universe. Now think about the alternative. Something coming from nothing. There's no science experiment that can even come close to recreating that. The existence of a universe with a beginning points to the existence of something beyond the universe, something that does not depend on anything else for its existence, something of immense power, something that has qualities, well, kind of like what we'd think of as a mind, intelligence. One of the prominent scientific theories right now about what caused the Big Bang is called the nothing hypothesis. It's not hard to get your head around this one, okay? It goes like this. What caused the Big Bang? Nothing. Did it happen? Yes. What caused it? Nothing. It just happened. And they say faith and science don't mix. That one takes some serious faith. And so as scientific as we want to make this thing, there's a point where all of the evidence takes us to an expression of faith in something ultimate. Whether you call it God or a nothing hypothesis, but it requires some faith. And my point for our purposes today is simply this. The narrative that we're being fed that says every scientific discovery and every advancement leads us further and further away from God, it's simply not true. Sometimes the evidence actually points us toward faith in God and not away from Him. And that's Paul's point as we finally arrive at our text in Romans 1, 20 and 21. Paul suggests here that when we look at the order and the intricacy of nature, that it's one of the ways that we can discover and learn about God. Look what it says. Romans 1, 20 and 21. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and his divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made. So they are without excuse, for although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Now, I want you to just notice a couple of things here about this passage. The first is that God has revealed himself through the created universe. Look at those three things in verse 20 that are revealed. It says his attributes, his power, and his nature. You can underline those three and just connect them to the phrase a little bit later on that says, in the things that have been made. And just write, God is revealed in creation. This is called God's general revelation. It's the way he's revealed himself to the whole world. There's also a thing called special revelation that comes through Jesus and through God's word. This is a saving revelation because it provides the way for us to be in relationship with God. But he's also revealed himself, as we see here, generally to all humanity through the created order. And look what it says next. It says, so they are without excuse. He's saying, don't try to disconnect the creation from the creator, because all of the stuff that you're looking at, all the stuff that you're researching, all the stuff that you're studying and investigating and doing experiments on in the scientific community, it all points to me. You keep doing it, but as you discover more and more about the creation, it's going to ultimately give you insights into my attributes, into my power, into my nature. And so in a perfect world, our scientific discoveries would actually lead us to worship and not to divisiveness. And so if you came in today thinking that if you believe in science, you can't believe in God. Maybe you had that one college class freshman year, or you read that one book, or you got onto Reddit, or you deep Googled an issue that you had a question about, and you concluded, oh, well, there's science, and then there's God. And if I believe in science, I really can't believe in God. Here we have the Bible from God himself saying that all scientific discovery will point to him. This is not two sides. This is not a war. This is not an either or. God is saying, I want you to see how the evidence points you to me. But here's the problem. Look at verse 21. Paul says that the issue is not a lack of evidence, but the suppression of it. The problem is not that the evidence isn't there. It's that we overlook the evidence for God's existence because we would rather believe something else. Maybe it's not a head issue, because the evidence is there and the intellect is there, but maybe, just maybe, it's a heart issue that we're not willing to believe. I want you to circle two different phrases in verse 21. The phrase that says that they knew God and the one that says that their hearts were darkened. And just write head versus heart. They knew, but their hearts were darkened. And some of you had those moments where your mind made room for the possibility of God, but your heart wouldn't honor him. You couldn't bring yourself to surrender to him, to bow the knee to him. And if that's you today, man, I hope that you're willing to consider that God hasn't given up trying to get your attention. And that when the sun comes up tomorrow morning, it isn't only because of the earth's rotation, but it's because God is love. And behind all the wonderful beauty of scientific study in this world, he wants you to discover the one who made it all. Because you see, science is perfectly positioned to answer the how questions. But Christianity is positioned to answer the who and the why questions. And in this way, faith and science need each other. Because, see, if you completely understand the how, you'll always be left wondering who and why. And so when it comes to you, who? That's the question. Atheist, agnostic, Christian, who? Who will you trust? Who will you believe? Who will provide you ultimate answers? And when it comes to you, why? Why do you wake up in the morning? Why do you exist? Why do you feel like there's something more? Why do you long for meaning and purpose if this is all there is? You see, these are the questions that science doesn't answer. Guys, it is not faith versus science. It's faith and science. Who, why, and how? let me encourage you with two very simple next steps today. The first is this. Pick up your copy of the book, Problem of God. Wherever books are sold, it's a really good one. I would encourage you to grab it and read it. And remember, our first 100 first-time guests this month across all our sites will receive a free one of these books. And so if you're a guest, take your information card, that blue card, out to the Next Steps desk and pick up your copy. If you're not a guest, bring a guest next week so they can get a free book. And if they don't want it, you can have it. All right, here's number two. Invite someone to the rest of this series. Commit yourself to being here through the month of September. We're going to be diving into some really interesting subjects. And so make it a priority to be here yourself, even if you're brand new to all this. Over the course of a month, it's about a 4-hour commitment. And I think that exploring these deeper matters of faith is worth 4 hours. But don't come alone. Bring some folks with you that may be interested in these matters as well. I want to invite your host now to come and close us out today. God bless you.